Welcome to Breaking It Down with D'Anthony, with your host, Devin Anthony. Welcome to the latest edition of Breaking It Down with D'Anthony. I have a special guest on the show today, my very good friend Will. Will, introduce yourself.
Oh, what's up? I'm happy to be here. I'm big, we're talking about Tatis, so I know a lot about it, so I feel like I could add some good info.
Yeah, big baseball guy. You know, he's a Dodgers fan, so obviously I'm sure he's happy that it's not looking good for the Padres anymore. You know, brought in Juan Soto, but I don't think he's gonna be enough to turn this team around without star guy like Tatis.
I think even with Tatis, they weren't gonna beat the Dodgers. They're just too good this year.
So Tatis was suspended for 80 games for PEDs, for a banned substance called close to ball, and obviously, you know. A guy of his stature, I'm not going to say that there's necessarily more of a target on his back. A lot of guys get caught, but since he is a star, I think MLB probably investigated a little bit more than they would have with other guys, especially because of his performance. And this has been something that's been happening in the league for a while. Obviously, broke the news huge a couple years ago, you know, with guys like A-Rod, even before that, right? So, I mean, it's been ongoing in the league for multiple decades now, and for guys to be still doing this and thinking they're getting away with it, it's unacceptable. And I think guys should hold themselves accountable. There's no reason to try to hide it when they do get caught, and they look even worse when they do try to hide it.
Yeah. So most people think the people taking steroids are the guys that are huge, just getting super big. But the steroid Tatis and many other MLB players that have yet to be caught are taking our steroids that make people faster. So this specific one Tatis was taking was invented in Russia for sprinters to help them get faster, because the fat for baseball, the faster you are, your faster your swing, the more power you're going to have. It's not always about that mass. And so I think this definitely shines a light on all the people that may be taking steroids that no one even thinks about because they're not as big.
So if the Padres do not reach the playoffs this season, he can come back to the Padres after 32 games next season, which would be May 5th of next year. So that would have been almost 2 years since he would have last appeared, since he came out injured as well, coming off the suspension. I mean, for someone like what I was saying earlier, like for someone like this, you know, it's huge brand wise. You know, Adidas dropped him the other day for it. Like that's huge. It's a huge money contract for him. And I don't blame him. Like, why would you want to affiliate with an athlete that doesn't truly, you know, live out the expectations of what it means to be an athlete with integrity?
Yeah, and it's definitely for Fernando. Obviously, he's losing sponsorships like that. But the big question is, a lot of these players that do get caught doing that end up losing their chance to go to the Hall of Fame. Obviously, he's early in his career, but he's very projectable to be a superstar. And with this, it's definitely going to hold him back a lot and haunt him in the future.
Yeah, and it just hurts to see like a really good young guy like this. Obviously his career is not ruined, but it definitely makes him work. It's gonna leave a scar for sure, and a lot of, you know, when he comes back, it's gonna be kind of a thing where it's like, you know, you'll hear it from the fans, same way the Astros. You know, when you go to an Astros game and they're on the road, and people start banging trash cans, stuff like that, trying to make noise, like making fun of them, which they deserved it, and I would say he deserves all the criticism that he's gonna receive as well. Like, you know, this is not the end for him. He'll come back. It's good. He's not towards the end of his career. He's still a very good young star in the league. But in terms of just integrity level and guys respecting him around the league, there's even guys in the locker room who strongly disagree with what he did. I'm sure if one of your teammates, you know, got in trouble and did something, you wouldn't feel a lot of remorse for them, because it ultimately falls on their shoulders. It's their fault.
Yeah, it's definitely a respect thing from the teammates too, because they're feeling they're fighting for a wild card spot, possibly find their way into the playoffs, deep in the postseason. Now without Tatis, they lose that extra charm, and he just does not. I mean, it's just going to hurt the team. The players are going to be mad at him, obviously. And it's going to start their next season. I think they have a good enough lineup to be able to go those 30 games without him, but it's still going to haunt them.
Yeah, and speaking of suspensions, I think we got to talk about the whole Deshaun Watson issue, which, by the way, for the NFL to now come out and appeal Judge C. Robinson's decision to suspend Deshaun Watson 6 games for his action, to then increase that to 11 games. I think for the NFL to go that way and to say that they were going to trust her decision, and then obviously just came out and clearly didn't, I think that there's, I think it looks bad on their shoulders as well. And of course, Deshaun Watson, obviously it falls on him as well. But if you're the Browns and you're Deshaun Watson, I think you're happy with this, because I think a lot of people expected at least a full season suspension.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everyone expected him to not be playing football this year. And to see him, he's coming back. I think his first game is against his former team. And I don't know. It's going to be weird, because I think a lot of fans, even of his team, of his former team, are all just going to hate him. I think it's going to really haunt him.
Yeah, and like even the one preseason game he played week one against the Jaguars on the road, the fans definitely had some stuff to say to him. Even when he does come back, he's definitely going to hear it. I think rightfully so. I think what he did is sick and it's disgusting, and that, you know, obviously a lot of these girls are just getting paid off now. And he's winning most of these cases, but I think there's no denying what he did. I don't know if all of them are true, but I know some of them are. For this many people to come out against it, obviously some of them have to be true. But I think it's in terms of, you know, if you're same thing with Tatis, right? It's very different situation, but it destroys your brand. And if you're, you know, if you're a big sponsorship company, you're like the Subways of the world or Adidas or Nike or Gatorade, you don't want to affiliate with these guys. And I'm sure, you know, Deshaun Watson is sitting on loads of money, and that's not necessarily a problem for him. But when people remember him, when we talk about him in 15, 20 years, when he's out of the league, we're like, oh, that was the guy that had all those sexual allegations. Like he was that disgusting quarterback that was, you know, that was trying to do stuff with all his massage therapists. Like it's just a really weird, sticky situation. I'm surprised that the Browns wanted to have to be a part of that.
Yeah, I think the only reason he's getting off easier than, say, Tatis did in the MLB is these leagues just don't care when it's outside of the sport. You know, something like that, it obviously it's going to look bad in the league. They already have a lot of bad light coming from other players, and they frankly don't care about the stuff outside the league as much as they should. They care more about in the game cheating like that, people betting on themselves, stuff like that.
Yeah, like, you know, Hopkins gets 6 games for PEDs. Calvin Ridley's not even playing a single down this season because of gambling. Like, I think there's like a level to it where it's like, where is that fine line in between? Like, obviously what Deshaun Watson did is significantly worse than what Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins did. But you know, I guess in the eyes of the NFL, everyone should be held to the same level. And that's ultimately the decision. That's the decision. I don't agree with it. But of course, you know, with those 11 games, like obviously the whole point of suspension is the NFL to be, hey, like we disagree with what you did. You know, you should have this time to think about what you did. And obviously we're not just going to let you come back right into it, but like you're still letting him play the season. So like, what's even the point of giving another 5 games? Like, I think that the decision was a decision. They probably should have just gone with it. Cause now in the NFL, it looks even worse on their part. They should just stomp their foot down in the beginning and said, you know, you're done for the season, but that's not what it was. They didn't even trust themselves to make the decision. Now they try to come in and appeal it. So I think from NFL standpoint, from their brand, it doesn't look good. For Deshaun Watson, his brand and his team, it doesn't look good. And for the Browns to support this and to go after Deshaun Watson and give up on the future of Baker Mayfield and so many other things, it's like, what's the point of all this?
Yeah, these leagues just don't crack down on that stuff enough. As baseball has same players, they have Chapman, a domestic abuse charge for it. Players on the Braves, Marcell or Ozuna or whatever. He another one that was convicted and got to play. I think he just now is probably done, but he still got to play so much with that on him. So
I mean, there's always going to be people who are pleased and people who aren't. And I, at the end of the day, you're not, you know, your decision's not going to be, and you know, what's right in the eyes of everybody. But I think I think the NFL should have taken a bigger stance against this for sure. And I think, you know, somewhat good on them for at least trying to appeal it. But at the end of the day, there's going to be that crowd of people who aren't going to agree with it. So with Deshaun Watson only playing probably 5 or 6 games this year, who even knows how good he is when he's going to come back. But you know, speaking of the guys who are playing, who are kind of, when you're looking at your fantasy draft, when you're looking at players who you want on your team, who are kind of those first few picks where you're like, if this guy's on the board, I have to have him on my team.
Well, I mean, the first guy that I want, I had him last year and he was just amazing for me, is Jonathan Taylor. And I think that's an obvious one, but he just put up what record game last year was 50 something points, just tear. And I think he's gonna do it again. to be honest.
Yeah, and guys like him, where they kind of, there's a lot of guys last year who had huge seasons a lot of people didn't see coming. Cooper Kupp, for example, I think I drafted him in like the fifth or the sixth round, and he scored more points out of anyone last year. I'm not sure if he can keep up that same level. Obviously, defenses are going to change their scheme against him, like, you know, compared to how they did last year. You know, Allen Robinson coming in as well. So maybe Kupp doesn't get as many touches, but that dynamic between Stafford and Kupp last year, they looked unstoppable. And of course, you know, Kupp is making a lot of that happen. Stafford's a great quarterback, and I don't think Kupp could have done what he did last year with Goff compared to Stafford. But ultimately, Cooper Kupp's the man. Like, he won Super Bowl MVP for a reason, and Stafford didn't.
Yeah, and another one we got to see last year, the last 5 weeks really heated up, and I'm excited to see where he falls this season, is Amon-Ra St. Brown. He was just a late pickup for, I think, everyone, even off waivers in some leagues. And those last 5 weeks, he really showed what he could, putting up 35 points in the week 17 and following it up with 26 in week 18. I think he's excited to see the season.
Yeah, and for a rookie like that to just, you know, to grow like that out of nowhere last year, I'm not saying that Jared Goff's a terrible quarterback, but he's definitely not top 10, top 15 in the league. You know, but I'm watching Hard Knocks, I'm watching the Lions training camp. It does look like they're actually building a culture there this year. A lot of young guys, but I think that, you know, with him getting most of the touches, him being wide receiver one by far this year, I think I definitely agree with you there that there's huge potential for him. I think I definitely think he can go in the top five or six rounds.
Definitely.
DeAndre Swift, however, he hasn't been the most, I mean, he has moments of greatness, and he has moments where obviously, you know, he just can't produce with the offensive line. If it came down to it, and there's Joe Mixon still left on the board. There's guys like Eckler. I just don't feel great. Like guys like Saquon, DeAndre Swift, I don't feel great about him this year. Saquon, you know, we got to see a little bit of last year coming off of injury, but still, he's a guy that's very injury prone. I'm not saying that DeAndre Swift is injury prone. I just don't think his head is at where it has been the last couple of years. And Jamal Williams he's come up as a great running back for them too. I think he's going to get more touches than he did last year too. So,
yeah, and another running back you have, speaking of the injury prone, is Christian McCaffrey. See where he falls this season. Last year, obviously, got hurt early, came back hurt again, and he's always had the potential to be a huge fantasy points running back, and he's, I think, 2 years now, just been hurt, and we'll see if he could stay healthy this year, because he could be a good later pickup, because I think he's fallen because of the injury risk.
If he stays healthy, he is the most valuable player on the field at all times, offense or defense, just the way that he comes out of the backfield, the way that he can line up in the slot. But when he's just has been a guy that you can't trust, whether you're the Panthers, whether you're a fantasy owner, a guy that's been very succumbed to injury the last 2 years. I traded for him last year, you know, him coming off injury, thinking he was going to be good to go. And I get him for 3 or 4 weeks and he's right back. And then he's gone. He's done for the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season. Like, if you're a fantasy owner and you're looking for a reliable running back, you're looking for guys who are sturdy, who are going to make it through 15, 16 games a year, not who are going to, you know, you'd rather have a guy who's going to give you 14 or 15 points pretty much every week, every other week, than McCaffrey coming, all right, maybe hits 4 or 5 first great weeks. He's dropping 20 each week, and then all of a sudden week 6 he's done for 5 or 6 weeks. Like, you don't want that, right? So that's why I also feel kind of on the fence about Derrick Henry. He got injured towards the end of last season. He was able to come back for the playoffs miraculously, but again, like, it's always there's always something that happens again. Like, once these running backs get injured, it usually happens again, which is why, you know, you don't see running backs in the league have very long lasting careers anymore. You know, what Frank Gore and Adrian Peterson did is very rare to be in the league that long for the position they play. But for guys now, like, you see these guys get injured so early in their career. You got the Cam Akers of the world for the Rams. Like, he's coming, like, he was able to come back, but he didn't look himself. I don't think he's going to be that good this year, which, you know, as a Rams fan, hurts to see. But, you know, the running back position has become a young position in the league, and it's about guys who are sturdy and guys who are fast. And that's just not an old man's position anymore.
Definitely not. And a lot of them are rushing to come back, and they're just never fully healed, you know, playing with a hurt knee or something. It's just susceptible to be hurt again, not as good with it, everything.
Yeah, I don't really like Zeke this year either. Like, there's not a ton of running backs I'm sold on, which is weird. Like, if it came down to it, I'm probably, you know, if I have a great wide receiver like Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson on the board or Cooper Kupp, I'm probably going to pick them before I pick, like I'm not going to say that. Like, McCaffrey would be great, but I'm probably going to pick them before I pick, like, an Aaron Jones or a Saquon or Cam Akers or Ezekiel Elliott. Like, I'd rather pick these receivers who I know are going to be reliable and who are going to make it towards the end of the season.
Yeah, speaking of players like Jamar Chase, he's another one I'm excited to see. You know, had a great year last year, better than anyone could have predicted. I also had him on my team last year, and it was very exciting to have him putting up 55 points in Week 17. It was just unreal, his season.
Yeah, Offensive Rookie of the Year for a reason. I think he brought in a level of leadership that the Bengals didn't see coming. And obviously, no one saw the Bengals making the Super Bowl last year. It still doesn't even feel real that they were there. You know, who imagine if they had won? That would have been crazy. Like, would have such a young team that's, you know, that was able to knock off the Chiefs on the road. I think for the Bengals, there's a ton of upside this year. Joe Burrow looks good now. He'll be good to go. You know, Joe Mixon's going to put up big numbers. He usually stays healthy. He's usually pretty consistent. But another wide receiver I like is Debo. He was a late pick for me last year, 8th or 9th round, and guys were like, how were you able to get Jefferson, Kupp, and Debo on your team? I was like, Kupp and Debo went so late last year, and they just blew up this year. I don't think Debo's going to be as effective. I think this offseason, a lot of it's been he's had a lot of distractions with new contract issues, and speaking of the 49ers, they were able to sort it out. But I think there's even a more level of pressure. That's like, you got to live up to the expectation if you get paid this much money. He's one of the higher paid receivers in the league now. And I get it. He's really valuable for the 49ers, but I think, you know, he's kind of on the fence about you being used in the same way he was last year, where he's running the ball more. But it looks like this year he's going to be a strict wide receiver, which, you know, if you're a fantasy manager, you're not getting as many points because, you know, there'd be games where he only gets 2 or 3 catches, but then he gets 90 yards on the ground. So,
yeah, another player I've been seeing reports about is Lamar Jackson. Has heard he's learned to throw a little bit better, you know, the running back at quarterback.
Come
but
on,
I've heard he's going to start throwing a little better, and he could really explode this season if he figures out that throwing, because he could run the ball better than anyone.
People forget this dude's an MVP. This dude's legit, and, you know, and he's only been in the league for, what, like 3 or 4 years? Like, he is a legit quarterback in this league. A lot of people forgot that last year because the Ravens were one of the most – they had one of the most injured teams in NFL history last year. I think this year they're going to look a little bit more healthy. He doesn't have great weapons around him, but at least it's going to be better than what he had last year. They'll have more of a running game that he can rely on too. There is a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes with contract talks that I think are kind of going to affect him mentally. But, at the end of the day, I think Lamar Jackson's a baller. And if he's up there, I think he's definitely the way to go. I mean, you know, we did see Kyler Murray get paid. But if I had to choose between Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson, I'm gonna pick Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I do. I love his weapon of just running. You know, I love seeing a quarterback be able to leg it out like that. And if he is passing really well, it's just, I don't know how you stop that.
Yeah, it feels like he's just like more of a leader too. Like, he's got that sort of dog in him that I don't think Kyler Murray has yet. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, when Kyler Murray's down, he's trying to point fingers everywhere else but at himself. I think Kyler Murray could be a great quarterback, but I don't think he has, I mean, you know, he's very athletic, he can run the ball, but I think his problem is it's mental issues and it's leadership issues that, you know, not necessarily I'm calling Lamar a great leader in the league, but, you know, when Lamar needs to switch it on and take over, he does it. I don't think Kyler Murray has that same dog in him.
Definitely. I mean, Lamar, you can just tell Lamar's just been there. You know, it feels like he's been there forever the way he plays.
Yeah, but he's been there in the regular season, not the postseason. Like,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
You can put up all these numbers in the regular season, but everyone's going to remember you for how you play in the playoffs. So, it's going to be a tough hill for him to climb. To overcome this year to get the Ravens to that position. But, you know, if he wants to prove that he's that guy, he's got to do it.
Definitely.
I think – what do you think if you're drafting a quarterback and you're in prime position to draft a quarterback, second or third round, are you going with Mahomes or Josh Allen?
I think I'd go with Mahomes. Even with losing Tyreek, I think he's still going to be an electric quarterback this season. I think they're still going to be a good team.
I think Josh Allen, because I think it's going to take a while for Mahomes to kind of adapt and get used to not having a really electric, fast wide receiver like Tyreek Hill who can go get him 30 or 40 on any given play. I think Juju Smith's a great receiver, but I think coming off of injury, he's not going to be able to produce as well as he was able to the first couple years with the Steelers. I think it's a weird system for him. there's no doubt that Tyreek Hill has established himself as one of the better wide receivers in the league over the last couple of years. And for the Chiefs to lose that, I think it's definitely going to take a burden on them. And I don't think they realize it yet until they actually see it happening to them. Which is why I think, you know, Josh Allen, he's used to the weapons he has around him. He's got the likes of Stephon Diggs, you know, other great reliable wide receivers on the Bills. You know, and Josh Allen has established himself as I know this sounds crazy. I think he's a top three quarterback in the league. Fantasy-wise, he put up the most numbers on average last year. He's established himself in the run game for sure. He's not the fastest quarterback, but he's strong and he gets through guys. I think he's just a reliable quarterback. You know that he's not really going to have an off week. Yes, the Bills are going to lose games this year, but ultimately that'll fall on their defense like it did against when they played the Chiefs their last postseason game. Like, Josh Allen did everything in his power for the Bills to win that game, and ultimately it was the defense that let him down. Speaking of defenses, if you're going to pick a defense, you know, I'm usually a guy who likes to pick my defense based on the week. I am one of those guys, unfortunately, but if you have the opportunity to take the Rams, I would do it. I think, you know, Von Miller was a great pickup for them towards the middle of the season last year. Losing him obviously hurts, but if you look, would you rather have Von Miller or Bobby Wagner on your team? Of course you're going to take Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner is one of the greatest linebackers in the league and always has been. You know, he's part of that great Legion of Boom group in Seattle that was considered one of the greatest defenses of all time. I think his leadership, his grit, his strength, alongside with, you know, with Jalen Ramsey and the likes of Aaron Donald, like, to have those three guys who are arguably three of the best defenders in the league, I don't see how you can't take the Rams.
Yeah, I think the Rams are obviously, just like they have been the past few years, just going to be your best defensive pickup. And for you, someone that does go by the week, I feel like if you get the Rams, I don't think that's a defense you want to drop ever. Even if they're having a tough matchup one week, I still think that's the defense to keep all season.
Biased opinion, but I think the Rams are my favorite to run it back this year. I think it's really hard to run it back in this league. You know, few guys have done it. Obviously, Tom Brady's done it. But I think what they have going on there and the culture that they've built since bringing in Matt Stafford, I think that they just look unstoppable. I think they can probably only lose two or three games during this regular season if they stay healthy. You know, losing, it looks like they're going to lose OBJ, but even I don't think Odell's going to be the same coming back from that horrific injury he had in the Super Bowl. And then they just bring in Allen Robinson. So I think it's a very, very good chance that the Rams run it back this year. Who's your favorite?
I think the Rams are going to be there, of course, definitely fighting for a Super Bowl spot, for sure going to be in that championship. I think you're going to have the Buccaneers there always, in the playoffs at least, you know, fighting for another Super Bowl spot. Just Tom Brady's just unstoppable coming back. This could be his last season, especially if they do make it all the way there. I think the Bengals are going to be back there again like they were last year. Joe Burrow is not going to slow down. You know, you have Higgins. He's been great. You have Ja'Marr Chase. I think they're going to be there again.
I mean, I just don't – I think what the Bengals did was great. I'm not discrediting them for their run, but I just don't see that team staying healthy. But I don't really like the Chiefs either. I think the Bills have been right there the last couple of years, and I think if we see a Rams-Bills Super Bowl, which is what I would have liked to seen last year, I think on paper those two teams look like the best two teams in the league, and that's what I would love to see.
I would love a Rams-Bills Super Bowl too.
Speaking of favorites, you know, we're underway in the Premier League. Champions League is going to start soon. You have the Champions League groups pulled up. Who's kind of the main team? Who are kind of the best teams you see in each group? And what do you think is the group of death?
I mean, the group that jumps out to me as a potential group of death, you know, we have to wait to see how they are this year. But Group C with Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Inter Milan. Inter Milan a little less. They have Lukaku adding again, so he could make that team pretty good. Barcelona, always a wild card. They got a bunch of new pickups, but, you know, their system has been pretty bad since Messi left. And then Bayern Munich, we have Mane coming to that team, already the Bundesliga champions. I think they're going to play amazing again. And it's great to see Bayern Munich and Barcelona playing again in the Champions League, because Bayern Munich's gotten the best of Barcelona the past 3 or 4 years now, and I think Barcelona's going to be wanting to get back at them.
Yeah, and how awesome would it be to see Lewandowski goal in Allianz Arena coming back against Bayern Munich? I think that'd be awesome. Exactly. Not necessarily my group of death, but I do like how Group D looks. I think that's a very balanced group. I think that there's no clear favorite to me, to be honest, that jumps out in that group, which is why I think that every game that group is going to be competitive. I hate seeing blowouts in any professional sport, especially when you see Bayern Munich just womp on teams like 5-6-0, even in the Champions League. But I think Group D, those are all very close games. Frankfurt, Tottenham, Sporting, Marseille, those are all teams that usually finish around third or fourth in their leagues. So I think those are going to be a lot of great battles. But I think Group G especially stands out to me. Man City, Sevilla, Dortmund. You have Erling Haaland returning to Dortmund. That's going to be a great game. Sevilla always plays awesome in European football. Dortmund's always right there as well. Obviously, Man City is the favorite in that group. They look way better on paper than those other teams do. But for me, I think Group G definitely stands out.
Yeah, I think Group G is going to provide some good matchups. I think Man City should and ultimately win that group. I think the ones that I feel robbed of is Group F with Real Madrid. Lizpeg's not the worst team, but I feel like you're not going to be seeing Real Madrid have to play these super tough teams for that. And same with PSG in Group H. Juventus isn't going to be bad. I believe they just added Dybala, right? Or
Dybala left.
Oh, Dybala left. My bad. But Benfica is not best team. Juventus, it's going to be, should be for PSG if they play. They obviously have the best front three in world football, in my opinion. And I think them and Real Madrid got off kind of easy. I would have loved to see them in the same group, to be honest, playing each other. But we might see that in the round of 16, round of 32.
I think it's rewarding for Real Madrid. The path that they went through to win the Champions last year was remarkable. Beating Chelsea, beating Liverpool. Those are two very hard games for them. To do it in the fashion that they did. Beating PSG as well in the round of 16. Like, those are three great teams that they had to get through, to lift the cup at the end. And I think a team like Real Madrid just knows what it takes to win European football. They've won six Champions League trophies in the last 10 years. It's ridiculous what they've built over there, and they know how to conquer European football, and they've done it so well. So I don't see how they're not a favorite again this year.
Oh, I think they're for sure a favorite. They have their veterans that just lead that team, players like Modric. They did lose Marcelo, but
Casemiro,
I think they'll be fine. Casemiro, yeah. They do lose to Man U, but I don't think it's going to hurt him too much. I think having Benzema, you have Vinny, who's just only getting better. You have Rodrigo, another Brazilian talent that's getting better. And I think I could easily see them back competing again. I mean, it'd be crazy for them to make it to the championship again, but I think round of 16 is easy for them.
Yeah, I mean, and you lose Casemiro, which hurts, obviously, but and then you just reloaded. Like, the Real Madrid has been on their toes. They've reloaded with younger guys, the likes of Valverde, Camavinga. Modric is towards the tail end of his career, but he's still going to produce for you every night. Same with Toni Kroos. And obviously, you have your leader up top who just won UEFA Men's Best Player. He's probably going to win Ballon d'Or, and Karim Benzema. I don't know how you can bet against Real Madrid this year.
Yeah, they did do a great job adding new talent, such as, I'm probably going to butcher his name, but Tchouaméni.
Mm-hmm.
Great French talent. He's going to be great for them this year. I feel like him and Camavinga, both young French players that are just, I think they could end up as Real Madrid legends soon, like Modric and Kroos, as long as they stay healthy, stay there. Big group I want to talk about is Group A. Obviously, Liverpool looks like they could be the favorite of that group, but I do like Ajax. They always have a very solid team, and I think they could definitely pull off some upsets here.
I like Ajax too, but they've lost so much in the last couple of years. Eric Ten Hag goes to Man United. He brings over Martinez with him. It looks like Antony could be on his way out as well to Man United. Ajax, but they again, they produce talent every single year. Like, if you look at that Champions League team that they had in the 2018-2019 season when they fell short against Tottenham, if that team had stayed together, that probably would be the greatest team in European football right now.
They're definitely always producing talent. And I mean, so long as they do keep Antony, which they haven't lost him yet, they do lose all their top players to these bigger teams. But I mean, if they retain him, I think they could definitely be competing, pull off some upsets. They're definitely not a favorite, but I'm excited to see what they can do. Dark horse for sure.
If Ajax and Dortmund never sold any of their top players, those two teams would probably be the two greatest teams every year.
Oh, by far.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it is a business, and that's how these clubs, stay afloat. They have great academies, but that's ultimately, these bigger clubs are just have more money and they're going to make more profit. That's ultimately just how it works. who are kind of, you know, surprisingly through four match weeks, Arsenal sits atop of the Premier League with a perfect record, 4-0. Do you think that's sustainable for Arsenal to, you know, at least finish top three? Or who do you think wins the Premier League this year?
I don't think Arsenal is going to keep up this form, definitely. I think, obviously, the favorite is going to be Man City, even after these first few weeks not being on the top. But I think it's just taking time for Haaland to get used to that system, because he's not your regular Man City player. You know, he's more on the through balls, just run, play him through. And Man City's always been more of a possession, you know, make good passes team. And I think once Haaland can adapt to that, or they can adapt towards Haaland, find a little mix, I think it'll be wraps.
Yeah, he's really starting to settle down nicely. Got a hat trick against Crystal Palace today. He just looks so strong. Like, he, the level of aggression and physicality he has, and that passion and grit is exactly what Man City needed up top. It's what they had with Aguero for a really long time. Obviously, Aguero, you know, not really playing anymore, wasn't at the same level towards the end of his career, but that's what he was, you know, 2010, 2011. They need that. Man City needs a top striker like Haaland to you know, to compete. Now, you know, they've won the last couple of Premier League championships, but to be, you know, their main goal is to compete for a Champions League. That's the one thing that they don't have on their resume and the thing that they need. And I think Haaland, you know, Real Madrid's going to be right there, but Haaland can definitely get them in that position as he continues to sail down more and more every week. For Man City, I think there's more, it's just some defensive issues that they got to work out, you know, giving up 3 goals against Newcastle, 2 goals against Palace. But here's the thing, defense is not necessarily an issue if Haaland is producing every game. Like, we might see some really entertaining Man City games this year, because if their defense isn't doing well, you know, Haaland's going to try to put this team on his back, score 2 or 3 goals a game.
Yeah, I definitely think Haaland's the piece they will need if their defense is not producing. And another player that just came in this year that I'm excited to see is Darwin Núñez. Going to Liverpool, you know, the place where another Uruguayan legend, Suarez, got his career, and Darwin Núñez is looking to hopefully follow up, and I think he's an exciting talent.
He will be good. I think it's going to take him a little bit longer to settle down than it will for Haaland. I think Haaland's a much different level than he is, but, you know, to lose Mane, obviously Mane is world-class. I think he was everything for Liverpool, right next, you know, next along Salah. But yeah, Núñez will be great. I don't think he's going to be as good as a lot of people think he's going to be. Obviously, there's a huge expectation coming into a huge club like Liverpool, but, you know, he'll fit right in. You know, he'll be better than the likes of, you know, Divock Origi, like, you know. So to have that option, to have someone to push Firmino, I think is exactly what Liverpool needs.
Yeah, I definitely think he's going to be a good addition. See how he helps them fare in the Champions League and the Prem. But I think him and Haaland are a new generation for the Prem that is going to be very exciting to watch.
All right, to wrap up the show today, we're going to talk a little bit YouTube boxing. KSI, 2 fights today, one at the beginning of the card and one at the end, one against Swarms, another one against Pineda, young Mexican fighter, came in at 2-5. He looked terrible. They both looked awful. Looked like they never stepped in a ring before. KSI did his thing, dominated. But now it's come down to a level where it's like there's a huge money fight on the table, but who is that going to be? Is it going to be Andrew Tate? Is it going to be Jake Paul? Is it going to be, you know, McBroom? We know that Jake Paul is probably going to fight in October, you know, before him and KSI eventually fight next year. But that could be one of – it's crazy because these guys have only been fighting for, you know, 3 or 4 years, and that has the potential to be one of the biggest money fights in boxing history if they were to fight next year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think Andrew Tate is in the picture as much as people want to think. I think especially after him getting banned, I give him maybe a month before no one even hears about him again. But I think Jake Paul and KSI, that's the money fight. And I think KSI did lose a lot of, I feel like, respect in the boxing scene for, obviously, when him and Jake Paul both lost their fights, Jake Paul agreed to do it. No money for even Jake Paul. He wanted just the fight. And KSI rejecting that with not the best reasons, I feel like he lost a little bit of respect. And I think him versus Jake Paul could be a good fight. But I've got, much as I don't enjoy Jake Paul, I've got my money on Jake Paul. He looks to be the better boxer.
I mean, to be fair, I don't blame KSI, because the amount of potential you have and the amount of marketing that, obviously, that fight markets itself, but the things that you could do with that fight, I don't really blame JJ for wanting to wait that out. Obviously, you want to get off some ring rust, you know, and the reason why Jake was going to fight Haseem Rahman Jr. as well. You know, you try to, none of these guys just want to get right back into it. You know, look at Tyson Fury. He knocks off Deontay Wilder in October. Dillon White wasn't a great fight for him in April. Everyone knew he's going to dominate that fight, and he did. But now, he's got to a point where he's ready to fight. He's ready to fight Usyk, who defeated Joshua last week. I think that's a huge the fights that we have on the calendar next year for 2023 are massive. Boxing, non-YouTube. We have a lot. There's going to be a lot of exciting fights, a lot of big money fights, and obviously, you love seeing these big heavyweight fights, big names like Tyson Fury, Usyk, who are going to sell a fight. And I think it's got to a point now today with the media, how much it's grown. You have to be able to sell a fight. For the boxing fans out there, Terence Crawford. Terence Crawford's probably one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. But the problem is he doesn't know how to sell a fight. He's not able to market himself. I think once him and Errol Spence are able to sign a contract and are able to get that fight going, it's going to be huge. But in terms of making, a big money fight and what promoters can get from it, it's nowhere near what they can make from guys like Tyson Fury. And love or hate Jake Paul, I hate him. I think from a boxing level, if you're a boxing fan, of course you hate him. But if you're looking at the business side and what he's done with his PR team and marketing, he is a genius. He is brilliant. What he's done, he's obviously, I don't like him, but what the attention he's brought to the sport of boxing is incredible. And I think rightfully so that him and JJ are going to, if they do fight next year, they will make a ton of money.
Yeah, I mean, someone's always going to play that villain role. And I think Jake Paul plays it perfectly, marketing perfectly. And, no one ever wants to be the villain, but he's accepted that role as a villain, even if he's not the worst person ever, but he markets himself as that villain, gets so much attention and brings a lot of attention to the sport of boxing, which I think is they're generally losing it to sports like UFC, where people would rather go tune into that. These fights for boxing do need to be marketed and sold pretty well, and I think they're doing a great job of that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good fight. I'm not really sold on either of them yet. I think what Jake Paul has shown in his fights compared to what KSI has, if it were to go in the later rounds, I like Jake Paul because I think what he does is he draws out a lot of his fighters, gets them tired, and then hits them with a knockout towards the end. I think what he could do against JJ round 8, round 9. But if JJ goes in there and just starts swinging and Jake Paul doesn't see it coming, he's not really able to avoid that, JJ could also knock him out in the 4th or 5th round. So I think it can go either way. Obviously, I think there's a lot more we need to see from these guys. I would like to see KSI take another fight before. We know Jake's probably going to fight in October. There may be another one from each of them in between. But I think for them to target around an early summer fight next year, a huge stadium like Wembley or a huge stadium here in the U.S., maybe you try a SoFi or something. Like, for two fighters who haven't been in the game that long to already have the influence that they have, I know that wasn't because of boxing, but with the attention they have brought to boxing, there's no denying that what they've done is great for the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me to consider a KSI knockout possibly in an earlier or later round, I need to see in one of these fights before him show some knockout power, because Jake Paul has shown it with Tyson Woodley knockout. Like, he's shown he does have that power to knock out. And I think it's something that he definitely has advantage on KSI, because I haven't seen that power from KSI.
All right, well, we'll see. It'll be a very exciting fight. That is all we got for you guys today. Thank you so much, Will, for coming on the show. We definitely have you on again soon. You got any final words?
No, thank you for having me, man. I was glad to talk about it. It was a lot of fun.
All right, thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you soon.